Hello, Packers fans. Welcome into the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood here in Lambeau Field. I feel like we should just give you a forewarning. Ryan and I are on one today, and Spoon is having trouble keeping us in line. So
I was just singing Baywatch because of you, because of your video that you tweeted yesterday.
It had to be done. The video was in slow-mo. It had to be done. We were not the only ones. Jair Alexander still in sort of the same mood he was in on Sunday after the Miami game in his post-game interviews, talking to us today about who else? Justin Jefferson. He started his interview by saying, I'm not talking about that, talking about week one and the scheme and how it went wrong. But then he did go on to eventually talk about it and said, you know, we were a different defense then than we are now. So let's just start there, guys. Let's jump right into this. Week 17 versus the Minnesota Vikings and Justin Jefferson. This is essentially a playoff game for the Packers. It's a play-in game in a way. And Justin Jefferson is who killed them the first week. He had, what, close to 200 yards almost? Like 180? I need to go back and look at those numbers.
Close to 200.
Yeah. But every defensive member that we spoke to today told us they did not go back and watch the week one tape. And they said, it put a bad taste in my mouth. I didn't want to see it. And as Jair said, we're a different defense now than we were then.
So yeah, let's start there. And the Vikings are a different offense than they were back then, too. I mean, teams have figured out all kinds of different ways to play Jefferson, and they've had to adjust. I wouldn't go back and watch that mess either if I were them. I would just look at what some of the teams have done against the Vikings in recent weeks. And you know, Jefferson's had good numbers, but every game's been close. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of keeping him out of the end zone and putting pressure on Kirk Cousins. I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
You asked Jair specifically if you can almost live with some of those underneath things, you know, let Jefferson get 10 yards a pop, which would be good numbers for most receivers, but not give up a 52-yarder, sort of like they did to Miami last week. Is that the key? And Ryan, I'll come to you for this, to just sort of live with Jefferson maybe getting, you know, 9-10 yards average a pop, but don't let him get the deep stuff?
I think the key is making him work for what he does get. He's going to get what he gets, even if he has to work for it. But they didn't make him work for it week one. I mean, it was as easy as Justin Jefferson has ever had.
They were just playing pitch and catch.
Yeah, that can't happen. You got to make a guy like that at least work for it. And if they work for it and he makes his plays, you tip your cap because he's Justin Jefferson. But to play pitch and catch, that just can't happen. And what does that mean? It means you got to maybe put your best corner on him more. It means maybe play a little bit of press man. Not live in press man, because you can't live in press man against Justin Jefferson, but play some, vary the coverages somewhat. Don't just sit back and zone the entire time. Come with something creative. Try to fool them. Try to disguise what you're doing. Don't just sit there and let them play pitch and catch.
As I said, several of them made the comment that, you know, they're a different defense now than they were in week one. Spoon, in what ways do you feel they are different? One thing that stands out to me, and I'll just set you up here to start off, like versus Miami, for example, they had to mix some of their coverages, and they were disguising things they were doing where they looked like, I think back to the Rasul interception where it almost looked like he was playing man and then he dropped back. Is that sort of how the differences you've seen? Is this an actual viable defense that can be used against Jefferson and the Vikings?
Well, I mean, they're still primarily a zone team, and that was a zone that Douglas was in. I mean, it was a really actually pretty simple zone that Tua should have seen, and he just bit on Douglas. You know, good corners sit on that and then take off down the field and try to pick that off behind them. But I think the difference is they're letting the corners come up and play press. Now, it's not always man coverage. It's sometimes zone. But like Miami, you have to disrupt their routes because Tua gets the ball out so quickly. So they got up there and they got in their faces. And they've never done that with Jefferson. And you can't live on that because they're gonna line him up in the backfield. They're going to line him up in bunch formations, so you can't get your hands on him. But, you know, they got to figure out a way, probably, to me, if it were me, I would play, you know, zone with man under, which just means, you know, your corners are playing man and your two safeties are back and making sure he doesn't kill you deep. Because if you look at his last two or three games, he's averaging like 10 yards a catch. It's not, you know, he had like 222 yards against Detroit, but they lost. So teams are, he's really, really good and getting a lot of yards, but he's not absolutely killing teams. These games are really close.
The Packers were convinced after the game in Miami that the key to them turning around in the second half was finally keeping the top on the defense and communicating. Mm-hmm. And they didn't do that in the first half. Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill both had 50-plus yard catches because they didn't line up and play the areas of the field that they were supposed to. But, there's an elephant in the room, too, from Sunday's game. You know, this was the Packers' secondary in the fourth quarter that we expected to see all season. And until the fourth quarter, we hadn't seen all season. And we know that Tua played the second half with a concussion. Mm-hmm. And some of those throws, we don't know if the concussion affected how he played. We have no way of knowing that. We just know that he was. And some of those throws, like the pick to Jaire Alexander, where Jaire Alexander was shocked that the ball found him. He overthrew Tyreek Hill by a yard over his head. The throw to Raheem Mostert down the right seam that should have never been thrown, and Devondre Campbell has an easy pick. Some of these throws were just uncharacteristic throws for an NFL quarterback. The accuracy, the decision-making was not good. So I think it's going to be very interesting going into this game. Is this Packers secondary, was it a byproduct that they finally showed up and figured some things out and they're communicating now? Or did the concussion have an effect on the way that Tua played?
I think the thing that would be encouraging if you're Joe Barry is that on that throw to was it Waddle or Hill that Alexander
Tyreek Hill.
Yeah. Okay. So he sailed that, but if you look at that, there's like five defenders around him. And even Chris Barnes, you know, there's a little bit of a Tua might have seen, okay, this guy might be able to get a hand on it. Just the fact they had that completely covered.
Yeah.
You know, the Mostert one, that was screwed up because Mostert wasn't even looking for the ball. So I don't know what happened there. Rasul Douglas just made a really,
really
good play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, guys, the very best corners in the NFL make that play.
Yeah.
You know, they act like they're going under for the under guy and they drift back and they pick that off. So, but to me, what was really noticeable was that every time there was a pass, there were guys around the ball.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like some guy, except for the two, you know, screw-ups.
Stark contrast to week one,
yeah,
where it was pitch and catch.
I think, too, you could be encouraged. Like, I think I asked every corner over the past 2 days, are these turnovers contagious? And they all said yes. And that, you know, they come in bunches. You think back to, like, week five versus Washington. They were, well, that's when they first started to grab some, but they were still dropping some of those too. Or versus Chicago, you know, I know Jaire had that one in week two, but like there were several weeks there, especially during that stretch of losses, where they were maybe near the ball, but they weren't making those turnovers.
Yeah.
And so some of that, yes, could very well be on Tua and the throws he was making, but looking at it from the defensive point of view, they were also in position to make the play. Does that make sense?
But they can't get overly aggressive. Like, you know, if you bite on something with Justin Jefferson, he's going the other direction and you're done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, perfect example, I think Rasul Douglas tried to jump that pass to Mike Gesicki, you know, on the sideline.
Yeah.
You can't do that with Justin Jefferson. Play the ball and play the guy and don't try to do too much. If the ball comes to you, make a play on it. But they can't be gambling with him because I was watching a Detroit game and he's running this post corner, and the, you know, corner's like, okay, I'm coming after this, and then bam, he goes in the opposite direction. He's open for a 40-yard pass.
You know? That first interception was kind of the secondary equivalent of kind of a contained pass rush. I've seen people say that Tua should have never thrown that ball. Tyreek Hill was wide open for a 10-yard gain. Mm-hmm. I mean, he wasn't covered. There were just five people around him. They were containing him, which is what you do against Tyreek Hill. You have to contain him. If you give a 10-yard catch up to Tyreek Hill, you live with that. You give a 10-yard catch up to Justin Jefferson, you live with that. He's going to get catches. You can't let him break explosive plays off of that. You've got to contain, and that's what they did.
And you've got to have a pass rush. They didn't have a pass rush against in that first one, first game. They have got to – if they rush the passer like they did against Miami, then they got a chance.
Both,
you know.
Jair Alexander and Rasul Douglas said today, when asked why these turnovers have been coming, they credited the pass rush. Mm-hmm. And Preston Smith in particular. Is this an offensive line where that pass rush can continue?
Well, it's stunning that they have a pass rush right now, because Preston Smith's got 5 sacks the last 5 games, and it's been 6 games since they lost Rashawn Gary. And when they lost Rashawn Gary to the torn ACL in Detroit, you would have thought their pass rush was on life support. But Preston Smith, and it's not been just him. You know, Kenny Clark has had some moments. Devontae Wyatt has shown.
Kenny Clark's played a lot better the last 4 weeks since the Chicago game. He suddenly turned it around. He wasn't very...
J.J. Inibari has had moments. It's not just been Preston Smith, but he has 5 sacks the last 5 games, and he is the guy, especially without Rashawn Gary, that you have absolutely got to get to the quarterback, because he's the most proven guy they have on the edge there. So it's a lot. I think a lot of credit to Preston Smith, who has broken this, he calls it a curse of his career, where he had one good year and then flatlined. One good year in flat, it's just a roller coaster that he couldn't break from, and he's broken from it this year. He's broken from it in the last 5 games. I think that there is a formidable pass rush in Green Bay. They're deeper than they've been the past few years, and that's really been important without Rashawn Gary. And that's something I think will continue.
I think they have to. They're going to have to take some chances. They've got a scheme and get Kenny Clark matched up with Garrett Bradbury as often as possible. I mean, he's made a career out of playing Bradbury. And Bradbury's hurt, too. I think he's going to play it, but that takes some guts to bring 5 guys, because that's one less guy to cover Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen and K.J. Wright. So,
and Hockenson.
Yeah, and Hockenson, exactly. I think pass rush is going to be the difference in this game.
Man, if you're Garrett Bradbury, and I know it doesn't work like this, but if you're Garrett Bradbury, you've got a playoff seed locked up. This would be a game a week that you'd be awfully tempted to say, I'll see you in week 18, because Kenny Clark owns Garrett Bradbury. There's nobody he's beat up on more in the NFL than him. So absolutely, Spoon, get him on Garrett Bradbury as much as possible.
You saying Bradbury's going to go to his coaches and be like, I'm sick. That's how my dad always was.
I don't know. But somehow, you know, they have to win. They have to win up front.
Before we move on to the offense, one last thing I want to bring up on the defense. You mentioned keeping the top on and how that is the key right now for this secondary. We saw versus Miami, was it the play to Waddle that was the 52-yarder that went down down to the 1-yard line? And you saw, like, him sort of go jet past Adrian Amos, which he has the speed to do so, and then Rudy Ford was not in position to contain him and keep that top on. And not long after that, we saw Darnell Savage come back in. Is that just – if you're Joe Barry, do you trust what Rudy Ford has given you so far and say, okay, that was just one of those situations where we had to pull you off, or do you – is this Darnell Savage's chance to kind of get back in there and not just play dime, but to play safety? Like, if you're Joe Barry, what are you doing with that safety spot?
Well, I think it's sort of like, my comparison is going to be like Washington right now, where they just switched from Tyler Heinicke to Carson Wentz. So, you know, okay, Wentz wasn't doing it. We went with, Heinicke. And now his limitations are showing, and so we're going to go back.
And Ron Rivera used the same excuse for both times. We needed a spark.
Yeah. And so you're going to go back to Savage. You have to. And they're going to just cross their fingers that he's corrected all the things that, I mean, he was a huge offender in that first game against the Vikings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe, you know, I watched a little bit. He only played a couple snaps, but Tariq Carpenter was like, every time he bailed back like he should, you know, he was deep. He, you know, maybe they need to play, you know, a dime and have Savage be a nickel with either Ennis Gaines or Keyshawn Nixon and then have Carpenter back there. I don't know. But Savage better come. Or
Cassidy, I think you asked a great question. I think it's a great question. And I think it depends on what the Packers think of Darnell Savage at this moment. Mm-hmm. They felt like he played really well when he came in for Rudy Ford in Miami. Did effectively getting benched for a couple weeks, did that get him right or not? Because if it did, it's obvious. There's no question that Darnell Savage, from an athletic standpoint, is the guy you want back there if it's him or Rudy Ford. But over the course of his entire career, the big issue with Darnell Savage has been tracking the deep ball. And you cannot have those breakdowns against mm-hmm. Justin Jefferson. You will get crushed.
Bite on that. You can't. Underneath stuff, which Rudy Ford was doing. And that was what Savage was doing before
so
that.
If they have faith or confidence in Darnell Savage turning a leaf, turning a page, and playing soundly on the back end, then absolutely you have to play him. Because athletically, it doesn't match up. It's a very clear choice. But if you don't, then you put him in at your own risk because you just cannot have those breakdowns against Justin Jefferson.
Can you imagine if Tyreek Carpenter played significant snaps and if you're Brian Gutekunst sitting up in your suite going, rookie, 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 yeah, rookie? Yeah,
it's yeah. been a good draft class for him.
Yeah, Carpenter's been an incredible special teams player. Mm-hmm. I mean, have you ever seen that guy? He is cut. He's big.
Oh, he's huge.
If they can, if he can cover
he had
anybody.
A huge hit on special teams.
Yeah.
Last week before last.
Yeah. I mean, he's an impressive looking guy. I don't know if he can play. I don't know if he can play safety, but he can play special teams, that's for sure.
I mean, just go down the draft class right now, right? Quay Walker looks like a promising rookie and he's had his, you know, rookie moments.
Starter.
But he's played a lot. He's got tremendous athleticism, projects really well. Devontae Wyatt, after going into that rookie defensive lineman chasm that almost every rookie defensive lineman goes into, he's coming out of that and showing up and hustling and making some plays.
And maybe a starter now.
Yeah, the two receivers, you know, the you know, Christian Watson, obvious, and Romeo Doubs has been showing it since camp. JJ, yeah, Samari Torrey might be a guy as a seventh-round pick. I mean, he's had moments. JJ Inigbare, I said it after Miami, he's a better number three, and I still think of him as number three because Rashawn Gary, even though he's not playing, he's obviously number one. He's a better number three than they've had in a few years. You go down the line, it's a pretty good draft class.
Sean Ryan.
I was about to say the only miss is Sean Ryan.
If he could only pick in the third round now.
Zach Tom,
he's a starter too.
Yeah. Well, that sets you up for David Bakhtiari and what they're going to do this
Yeah,
week.
Look at that transition right there. David Bakhtiari was back at practice on Thursday for the first time since his appendectomy, or what?
Wednesday. He was back the first time Wednesday.
Yeah,
he's back
practiced
okay.
twice in a row now.
For what Aaron Rodgers called his belly button injury, but for his appendectomy. Hey, guys, before we started filming this, I asked y'all, do you think David Bakhtiari could actually play on Sunday? And, you know, we all kind of were like, I would be shocked. I'm actually kind of shocked he's out there practicing. I thought he would be back in the rehab group for the remainder of the year. But, I mean, could you actually feasibly see him playing on Sunday a little less than a month out from an appendectomy?
I think it's possible. I think it's – I'd be surprised, but I think it's – I wouldn't be, like, shocked. Mm-hmm. I'd be surprised that, okay, he must have really – rebounded, or he's been doing more behind the scenes than we're aware of.
Yeah.
I, you know, getting cut into is no, you know, it's not a minor deal. But to me, it was how much strength has he lost, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, he didn't do anything for a week or almost 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't know. That's what it's going to come down to.
Couldn't even use the restroom. I mean, it's so hard to predict because it's an abnormal. It's not a football injury. You know, it's not a joint. It's not a knee. It's not an ankle.
And I think everyone's different too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he had part of his intestine stapled, and
He had an invasive. He had three options. He could take a pill. He could have a very minimally invasive, you know, just take partial out, or he could have the whole shebang. He had the whole shebang, including stapling his colon shut. So it's not something that we run across, or the NFL players run across very often. And speaking with him, he said it's basically a pain management thing. And he is fully aware that offensive lineman is about the worst position to try to come back from this against, because you're banging it against 300-pound men every single snap. It's not like a skill position where you can save it and you know, protect it. You can't protect the middle of your abdomen. You can't do that. So, but at the same time, if it was a big issue, I don't think he'd be practicing.
Yeah.
So much of it is pain management, and the pain is clearly to the point where he can practice. And if he can practice, I mean, he said his knee, because of the time off, feels the best it has all season. That's not an issue. He's in fairly good shape other than the pain management. So that, to me, is what might give him a chance to play, but I would still be really, really surprised if he just had three practices and back on the field.
If he can play, if he feels good enough, they got to play him. I mean, you got Danielle Hunter and Za'Darius Smith, and you have, if he's 80%, and then you got Yash Nyman at right tackle, that's the best offensive line you've had all year.
Do you have to, though? Because Zach Thomas played pretty well.
And that's what I was about to ask you, is a 70% David Bakhtiari better than 100% Zach Tom.
Zach Tom has made mistakes too. He's had some assignment errors that have cost them. His pass blocking's been pretty good, but Bakhtiari is. I mean, you just know that he's not going to be fooled by anything the Vikings throw at him. You know, he's not going to miss an assignment. I mean, if I could play Bakhtiari, if I were them, and they said, okay, he's physically ready, I would play him.
And then Elgton Jenkins and Aaron Rodgers were back at practice today, too. Christian Watson, we were told was going to be, but then he wasn't. He just did stretch. He didn't practice. He told us after practice that he didn't practice at all. Because, you know, there was always a chance that, like, he could have come out after we left.
Mm-hmm.
But he told us afterwards in the locker room he didn't practice at all today. But said that he felt like he could go Sunday on limited practice reps. If you're the coaches, are you putting Christian Watson out there with limited practice reps?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He's a smart guy. I have no concern of all the guys, him and of all the rookies, he would be the least concerned I would have about
I asked him as well, like, because of the way the first game went, the first play specifically, does this feel like a redemption game for you? He said, yeah, you know, I don't want to let my personal stuff impact the game, but yes, it is. Spoon, you called that very first play. If you're Matt LaFleur, just to give Christian Watson some confidence, do you go out there on Sunday and that be your very first offensive play again?
I would send him on that same play and then do a stop route and have him just turn around 20 yards downfield and throw it to him. You know, just to, you know, screw with Patrick Peterson's head, you know? Okay, we're running that deep ball. Yeah, oops. No, we're not.
JK.
You
know?
I feel like I'd figure out a way to go deep with him on the second play.
Maybe.
Set it up on the first play, then just go deep on him on the second play.
I'm going to fall out of my seat in the press box if that is what the first play is.
the thing with him, and he was, I could tell he had a hitch in his get along in the locker room. You know, that hip, he probably has a nice hip bruise.
Mm-hmm.
And they're probably just trying to work it out and not try to do too much so it flares up again. But if he can, you know, I asked him what his 40 time is if he's playing 80%. You know, is it like 4.45 or something like that? You know, so if he's 80%, then he's got to go too. They got to have him.
It reminds me of what his brother told me, his older brother, who was a linebacker at Illinois and then Maryland and then had a cup of coffee with Washington, the NFL. about Christian Watson's speed. He said if he could have given me a couple tenths off his 40 and still been drafted where he was drafted, and I'd be a whole lot better off than I am now. Like that, he has speed to lose. So 80% Christian Watson, still fast.
Yeah, they really, really, really need him on the field. So we will see.
If they don't have him on the field, what do you do? And actually, I wanted to throw in here, too. I think we all kind of knew this, but he did clarify today that the injury occurred on that tough, tough hit he took on the fourth down play that he converted for a first down. Mm-hmm.
That he should have never had to make.
I mean, okay.
Mercedes Lewis was wide open right next to him. But that's
Mercedes Lewis breakout game. I mean, that's one of those hits where you, if they fumble it, you understand. And you're like, yeah, he just got jarred. He got his whole noggin jarred. I don't know what saying.
It was a heck of a catch.
And he held on to it, but that is where he got hurt. Okay, so if he's not out there, what do you do?
Aaron Jones.
I don't know. I mean, you got to throw the ball against the Vikings. Their pass defense is their Achilles heel. Teams have thrown a lot for a lot of yards against them. You got to throw it. You know, you got to protect and you got to throw it. And, you know, you're going to try to run Aaron Jones and Dylan. You know, you'll try to do that as much as you can, but at some point you're going to have to throw it.
You know, Romeo Doubs and Alan Lazard are plenty good enough to make plays on this Vikings secondary. I mean, that's a bad secondary. But, you know, I say Aaron Jones, they need to have him more than six carries this week. Him and Christian Watson, they're two best players on this offense. And in a game like this, against a bad defense, you need to give your best player the football. You know, it doesn't have to be carries. It can be touches. Get him involved in the passing game. I'm not sure that the Vikings can cover Aaron Jones, but get him involved.
Dobbs looks to me like, you know, he's not the guy he was before the high ankle sprain. He does some great work when he's got a corner right on him and he'll give him that stiff arm, or he threw Xavien Howard around a couple times, but he's not getting like wide open. Like, mm-hmm. You know, he got open deep a couple times, you know, early on. So that would, if I'm the coaches, that would scare me if Christian Watson's there. Then you've got nobody to take the top off, and the Vikings are just going to load up the box.
Hey, Aaron Jones will take the top off.
Well, I don't know. I just think, yeah, they got to have Christian Watson in the worst way.
Aaron Jones was still dealing with a slight injury on Sunday. Do you feel like that's kind of what's holding him up?
Yes. I think there's no question. He was limited in practice last week. Matt LaFleur said, I think it was Tuesday, right after the Monday night game against the Rams, that A.J. Dillon cleared concussion protocol, and it's a good thing because Aaron Jones, we're going to need to manage him a little bit. And then they went out there and they managed him a little bit. He had one carry in the first half. And then when he got to crunch time, that's when he got the bulk of his five carries. And
he got it aggravated, too. He got it rolled on, too.
He did. He had to get it retaped because the first carry of the second half, he got it rolled up on again. But when it came winning time in Miami, that's when he was getting the ball. That's when he had his 18-yard carry on first and 20. There's no mystery here. They absolutely were managing his ankle in Miami, and it's a big question now coming into this game. He's practiced this week, but how that ankle is doing, because this is a game where you got to let him go.
And then Aaron Rodgers' knee was landed on versus Miami as well, which is why he didn't practice on Wednesday, but he was out there on Thursday, seemed to be full go. So do you feel like there's any concern there? Is this just sort of this part of the season where you're going to be hurting?
Yeah, I don't know what to expect from Aaron Rodgers anymore. I mean, I just it's game to game. I honestly don't know what you're going to get from him. It's play to play, really. You know, he can throw this toss to Mercedes Lewis that nobody in the NFL probably can make, and then he can't hit, you know, Randall Cobb and Alan Lazard in the wide open. Mm-hmm. It's just baffling to me. So I don't know. We'll see which Aaron Rodgers shows up.
From a physical standpoint, let's be real here. he's 39 years old. He's a 39-year-old quarterback, and he's now had three body parts ailing him this season. He had the broken thumb on his throwing hand. He had the ribs that knocked him out of the fourth quarter in Philly. And then he's got this knee. And no, I don't think that the knee on its own is you know, I asked him, did it bother you in the second half? He's like, no, I was running around pretty good. And he had an 8-yard scramble. He was moving fine.
Yeah, he didn't look
good. But big picture, he's a 39-year-old quarterback who's had his most banged up year in the past few seasons. And at this stage in a quarterback's career, you usually, those things take a toll. You usually don't become healthier and fresher at 39. So I think that that's something that we're talking big picture here, but that's something the Packers are going to have to consider. Is Aaron Rodgers physically going to hold up at this stage in his career? Because he's not a spring chicken at this point.
Yeah. Somewhere along the line, he has to dig deep and find the Aaron Rodgers from last year if they're going to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to have one of those games. I mean, maybe it's this Sunday that he has to just be on. Because I can't point to a game all year where he's been on.
Dallas?
Maybe a half.
Yeah, maybe Dallas. Yeah, second half in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, it's hard to find.
Just where he, you know, is rising above everybody else, I don't know.
Hmm. Before we sign off, one more thing. Keyshawn Nixon came out of Sunday's game versus Miami with an injury. He was running with the rehab group at practice on Thursday. Matt LaFleur, that's another one he thought was going to be practicing, and then he wasn't. Spooner, I know you talked to Keyshawn this week in the locker room. Do you get any sort of sense of what his status might be?
No, he was pretty coy about it. You know, he wants to play. But a groin injury, to me, is like way more serious than, you know, a hip bruise or whatever Christian Watson's going through. It's like one step and the thing goes. Mm-hmm. So I think they got it before it got serious. He seemed to indicate, he said it wasn't on any one play. It just started to tighten up. He told the training staff and they were like, you're done. So maybe they caught it ahead of time and maybe he will be able to play. But
he's such a game changer.
Yeah, I wouldn't count on it. I mean, I don't know who will return kicks. It'd probably be Dobbs.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ennis Gaines would have to play slot. Or maybe they go with Savage. I don't know.
He won't be taking it out, Romeo Dobbs, from 5 yards deep in the end zone. We know that.
No.
That's not happening.
It'll be back to Rodgers saying, just not taking me, you know?
It's like, and it feels like Nixon's return ability has, like, infected everyone. Because they put Randall Cobb back there to make a fair catch. That's why he's back there in those situations. And he tries to return it, and he gets dropped at the 10-yard line.
Yeah. Keyshawn Nixon has added a lot. But their special teams is playing a lot better, save for a really bad fake punt.
Mm.
But their special teams is, their coverage units are really good. And their blocking units are much better. Mm-hmm. It's not just Keyshawn Johnson.
Nixon.
Or Keyshawn Nixon. I mean, he a lot of it is him, but he's picking some pretty nice holes. And so, I don't know. It's without him, that's a big loss too.
Hey, was Matt LaFleur asked about that fake punt on Monday?
Yes, he was.
Oh, go figure.
Yeah. And Rich Bisaccia will be asked about it
today,
very soon,
right.
And I'm sure he's going to be really happy about it.
I'm sure.
I thought we came so close, and it was so funny when we talked last week about will Nixon have a return touchdown before the end of the season?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yes, he will. We are 9 yards away from me being right, boys.
That's the whole point, is that to go the whole distance, it's really hard. You ran out of gas, and as it turned out, they really needed him to score.
Yeah.
Like, don't slow down, don't, you know, get a block. He needed a block, one more block in the worst way.
Yeah, exactly. He can taste it now, which means if he's out there, I feel confident about my bet that he's going to score. As we said, coaches will go Thursday afternoon. I'm sure Rich Bisaccia will have a lot to answer for with that fake punt. But as you said, playing well in other aspects as well. And what will they do if Nixon is out on Sunday versus the Vikings? Yesterday, Aaron Rodgers was a little shocked to know that our colleague ESPN Rob Demoski had picked them to win versus Miami. I was like, oh, you actually picked us, Rob?
I didn't.
I did. Did you?
No.
Oh, wait. No, I picked Miami to win. I'm sorry.
We all picked
the Dolphins. Picked Miami to win. So I think that's kind of like where this team is at right now. You know, you never really know week to week what you're going to get. Them beating Miami, though, told me a lot more about this team than the wins versus the Bears and the Rams did. So that being said, you get the Vikings on Sunday. You get them at Lambeau Field. It's going to be in the 40s, but you get them at Lambeau Field. Vikings have a playoff spot locked up, as you said, but still looking for that high seed. Packers, this is they're playing for their lives. They're going to need some help from the Browns. But all of that to say, give me your prediction, Spoon.
I haven't decided yet. I really haven't. I'm going back and forth.
Yeah.
I kind of want to see what the injury report's going to be before, you know, on Friday. I mean, I think we know it's going to be questionable.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe we'll know a little bit more on Friday, because those are just key guys. Christian Watson and Keyshawn Nixon are very key guys.
You know, a quick note on the Miami game. That's what I was thinking about as I was delayed 3 hours in the Miami airport on Monday. This isn't 2016. Because in 2016, they were 9-6 at 15 games. I mean, they were quite a far ways ahead of 7-8. But it feels like that a little bit. And the parallel for me is that Miami win was the Seahawks win in 2016, where they'd won a couple games. The Seahawks come to Lambeau Field, and this is when Russell Wilson wasn't terrible. Russell Wilson was Russell Wilson at that point. And I think that all of us, I'm sure you probably remember the game. I think all of us were like, okay, this will be interesting. Like, the Seahawks could very well win this and just end this nonsense now. And when the Packers pulled off that win, I think Davante Adams went deep in that game. When they pulled off that win, it became real. Like, they'd won some games and they'd pulled themselves back from 4-6. But that's when it became real. It crystallizes, okay, this team has turned a corner. And the past couple weeks against teams, as Aaron Rodgers said, that the Packers should beat, the Bears and the Rams, two of the worst teams in the NFL, they got some momentum. But going into Miami, a team that we all thought that they'd beat the Packers, to get that win, this idea that they could make the playoffs, that win is what made this real. Like, okay, they might have turned the corner, and there's still plenty of bad play. This is, again, this team's not where 2016 was, but it's real now. Like, it's a real chance that they have. Because of that win, and it's just I don't know who's going to win Sunday either. I mean, I think it's flip a coin. I know the Packers are favored, and there's good reason for that. The Vikings are not a juggernaut at 12 and whatever they are. They're 11-0 in close games. Good teams win close games. So if it's a close game on Sunday, that is clear advantage Vikings. They've been there all season. They've won those games, won possession games all season. That's an advantage for the Vikings. But it just feels like something's going on with this Packers season right now.
See, I don't agree with that at all. Like, I think the Miami game, I think this is the game that will tell me where they're at. I think the Miami game was kind of a little bit of a mirage. You know, they played pretty well. You know, they gave it, but Miami's lost four straight. You know,
against the 49ers, the Bills, and who's
correct?
Chargers.
Yes, I mean, against three really good teams
on the road.
But right, so okay, I thought their game plan was terrible. Like, they should have given the ball to Raheem Mostert like 5 times in that game.
They got some help.
So I'm not there. I think let's see what they do against the Vikings. If they play again really well against the Vikings, then I'll start to think, okay, they're on a roll. When I want to see it.
When I looked at these last three games they had, I thought the game that they were by far the least likely to win was the Christmas Day game in Miami.
I did too.
And so for them to win that game, I am there where I can't really fully explain it. I don't understand it. There's no logical rationale for this team to be in the position that it is. I wrote this team off completely.
I know, but there's circumstances that led to that victory too.
But you can say that every week.
Yeah, but I don't think that's like the definitive win. I think this would be the definitive win to tell me that they're any good, because they still haven't played like a complete game. They still haven't played a really great game. I think in that Seattle game you're talking about, didn't they win like by 40 or something like that? Or
They won comfortably. I don't think it was 40.
What the score. I might be thinking about
it. But they came out and they played well, and they went out and won the game against a team that they weren't supposed to win a game against. I mean, that going into that game, I think most of us, I'm sure I picked the Seahawks. I think most of us thought, okay, the run stops here. That's how I felt going down to Miami. I thought, okay, the run stops here. This is nonsense. This is where it ends.
I felt like if they could beat Miami, they could come back and handle these last two games.
I think people outside of Green Bay kind of knew that Miami was starting to slip. And we kind of thought of Miami as the team that was really got off to a huge start. And so that's my caveat. So it's just my opinion. I think this is the game that shows whether they're for real or not. And they still need Washington to lose either.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the thing. So all that to say, I want to take the Packers this week. I'm frankly surprising myself that I'm even taking the Packers this week. I don't think the Vikings are very good, even at their record. They got it like, what, a plus 5-point differential this season. I want to take the Packers because I sense something weird is going on in this season. And I don't know that they'll make the playoffs because I don't know that Washington loses to the Browns. And the Cowboys, week 18, could be playing backups because they could be locked into the fifth. Yeah. And if they can, you know, Packers lose win their final two games at home against the Vikings and Lions, it doesn't matter if Washington doesn't lose another game. So I don't know if they go to the playoffs or not, but they are on some type of weird roll. Not a juggernaut roll where they're annihilating teams, but they're winning games. There is momentum when I didn't think that we'd see that again for the rest of the season. So for that reason, I'll take the Packers at home against a Vikings team that is very, very beatable. And we'll see what happens with Washington the last two games.
Yeah, I agree. I just think there's – it sounds so cliche, and I'm not even going to look at Spoon when I say it because he's going to roll his eyes. But there's something in the air. If you asked me right now, yes or no, does this team make the playoffs, I say yes. But I can't even look at him.
Because you don't know what Washington's going to do.
I don't. But it's after four different games fell their way in one afternoon, something just, I don't know.
Cassidy, I got your back. Cassidy
just tells me they're making the playoffs.
And I don't know that they do, but it's hard not to feel like that because over the last 3 weeks, every single thing that the Packers have needed, and it's a long list because, again, I thought they were dead after Detroit. I said on this podcast that I'd do a lap around Lambeau Field shirtless if they made the playoffs. I thought there was no chance. And every single thing on that extremely long list literally has happened. At this point, it's kind of hard when you've seen that for 3 weeks. It's hard to think that's just going to magically stop. Now, it could. It might stop. But the momentum is very tangible.
Spoon is so disgusted with us right now.
I'm like... Well, okay, you know, they have picked up a little bit of momentum. They still have to beat the Vikings, Washington. They still have to beat the Lions. Washington still has to lose, and all that so they can go on the road and get their butts kicked by San Francisco.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's to me like when 2010 or 2016, or 14, you know, you could tell this was a team that was – okay, they're revving their engines up and their offense is clicking. And, you know, I don't get that sense at all. Like, I don't get the sense that they can put up 30 points against anybody anymore. I maybe they will this week. Maybe this will be the breakout. But that part just is like keeping me very even keel because I haven't seen them have a breakout offensive game.
It's definitely not 2016. I agree with you on that. It's definitely not that. They were 9-6 in 2016. This team is not a 9-16. Yeah, this is a 500 team, but this is a terrible NFC.
They won a dramatic game in Chicago on the last play. I mean, that's when you knew they were just...
Yep, that Jordy catch.
Yeah, they were destined. But until that offense corrects itself, and if they do it this week, then maybe that's the sign.
26 points at Miami is not terrible. I know and they play complimentary football, which
four inside the 10-yard line.
Yeah, but they play complimentary football in a way that I don't know if they've played it all year.
Yeah,
which is huge to winning. Yeah. That's why the Vikings have won all these close games. To see that when they've been missing it all season, the offense and defense playing off of each other, to see that against a quality opponent fighting for its life. I don't know. I think it's hard for – and the reason why we probably are all over the map on our opinions here, it's hard to pin this Packers season down.
Yeah.
I mean, they have been all over the place, so you can see it any one of 50 different ways, because this has not been in any way, shape, or form a consistent team. What to expect, I don't think any of us know. All I know is that they're getting a lot of really weird breaks that I just never imagined a few weeks ago they would be getting.
Spoon, we know what Ryan's going to do if they make the playoffs. What are you going to do?
I'm going to show up on Monday.
Do your job.
Cassie's going to hold me to this, too.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to make plans for the following weekend after they get their butts kicked by San Francisco.
Plan your day in San Francisco. Go to what you're going to do on that
day. I would say it. I don't think it's possible, but it would be fun to see if they did make it that they had to go back to Minnesota. I think that would be interesting, but I don't think that's possible.
It's possible. It's just unlikely, because the 49ers have the Raiders and the Cardinals to close out the season. They're probably going to win those two games.
They're probably
they have a tiebreaker over the Vikings, who are only one game ahead of the 49ers. Yeah. So it's very unlikely, unless the 49ers lost to the Raiders or the Cardinals, which just ain't going to happen.
I know we're getting so far ahead of ourselves, too, but I saw yesterday that the 49ers actually think they'll have Garoppolo back for the playoffs. So, I mean, that could...
Is that a good thing?
I don't know. I'm curious. Like, would you rather face Garoppolo or Purdy?
I don't know.
Well, as long as we're getting ahead of each of ourselves, can you guys imagine if, of all years, this was the year that they actually won a playoff game against San Francisco? Of all the years that they actually exercised that demon this year? That's when you know something really, really strange is going on.
Yeah, they're going to have to. Yeah, anyway.
They're going to lose by 30 on Sunday, and this is going to all be mute.
I'll feel one way. I mean, the only way they can change my opinion about who they are is Sunday.
Yeah.
If they just play.
Are the Vikings good enough, though, to change your opinion? Because the Vikings are not very good.
No, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say they're not very
plus
good.
Plus 5-point differential. They haven't been stopping teams.
It doesn't matter. They're winning games, and they've got, you know, they got a franchise player. They've got enough on defense to win. I don't think they're a Super Bowl team, but I think they're playing better than the Packers. And so, yeah, I think it would be a significant win if they beat Minnesota.
You know who the Vikings are to me? The Vikings are the 2019 Packers, a team that they looked pretty a lot that season. All they did was win.
Yeah.
And they were 13-3 that season. And, I mean, you go back to 2019, the offense was trying to figure out its scheme in the first year. There was a lot of ugly in that season, but they were 13-3 when you look up at the end of the day. It's kind of who the Vikings are. There's a lot of ugly there. There's 33-0 at halftime to the Colts. But they find a way to win.
They put lipstick on a pig. Guys, I know we've got to get down to coaches. One more quick little thing, quick little note. We got this email while we were recording this. Ha ha, Clinton Dix has decided to retire as a Packer. I'm not even going to ask for comments on that.
Good.
As we said,
better you than me.
Packers will be facing the Vikings here at 3:25 on Sunday at Lambeau Field. We will continue to have coverage for you leading up to the game, during and after the game as well. And seeing if this improbable playoff run can continue one more week. Guys, thank you so much as always. Thank you so much for listening. This has been the Green 19 Podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com.